Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose. Cutting down to the truth through history and experience, The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bone's Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge, email kfr@scalpeledge.com, or the website scalpeledge.com. The next episode of The Scalpel starts now.
Welcome to The Scalpel. This is Dr. Keith Rose. I've been up for several days. Actually, I've been up for over a week getting very little sleep, and I'm no one special because there are hundreds of Americans like me that have been working night and day here in the United States of America to aid our Afghan brothers and sisters in their quest to leave a country that has fallen. And I can't say fallen, that was given to a tyrannical ideology and regime. The Taliban has the ground, the narrative, and the pace of collapse right now in Afghanistan. And me and my brothers, we are working around the clock, utilizing our networks in country, trying to get these brave men and women that helped the coalition, that aided us, that protected us. I was there over 12 years. These people risk everything to protect me so that I could come home to my family. They didn't just do it for me. They did it for thousands of Americans and supported us. And right now, the United States is little more than a spectator as one of the most tragic events in world history is unfolding. The Pentagon only had 2,500 troops in Afghanistan a few weeks ago. Now, they had authorized 6,000 troops, and they finally got, I believe, around 5,800 on the ground. But those were even slow dripped in over this past week. I mean, it was a rational number, but it wasn't done quickly, and it wasn't done with any deliberation. And at the same time, they abandon the U.S. forces, abandon under the failed leadership of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the feckless president we have today. They abandon Bagram Airfield, which is easily defensible and would have facilitated a smooth and orderly exit. They abandon that. Then they move to Kabul Airfield, what we call Kaya, Kabul International Airport. And they're on Kaya, and they still have their embassy. And I never forget, 12 hours before the embassy fell and they had to burn all the documents, multiple mainstream media news sources reported that intelligence estimates stated that it was at least 30 days before the Taliban would get to Kabul, and 90 days was their estimate before Kabul would fall. They did that a week. They said that a week out. No, I'm sorry, about 4 days out. And 4 days later, Kabul fell. So they were only off by about 86 days. And when Kabul fell, it didn't fall. Just the Afghan president with pallets of cash left the country and said, "I surrender." Not we, just I. And we were all, I remember where I was in the weekend. We were all left flat-footed going, "What just happened?" All the documents were burned at the embassy. They had to. And now I spent a lot of time in Afghanistan. And when you leave Afghanistan, you have to get an exit visa. And the only way to get an exit visa is you have a runner or facilitator take your passport to the embassy. And the embassy will give you a sticker and a stamp. And they have to stamp also your airline pass with an exit visa saying that you've paid the tax, you're ready to go, and you've been cleared to leave the country. And it usually takes between 24 to 72 hours. And since The rumors were that the Taliban were coming, although the rumors weren't that they were there yet. People had taken their passports, a lot of Americans, Afghan Americans, and regular Americans visiting, and left them at the embassy. And when the embassy fell in hours, thousands of American passports were burned. They had to. They do a major burn because they didn't know it was coming, and they panic, and they have to burn all the sensitive documents, and that includes passports. So you have some American citizens there that are running around Kabul. Their passport has already been burned. Now, most of those American citizens are wise enough to have a copy of their passport. We were always told to do that, to photocopy our passport. But they are running around in Kabul. And I will tell you, the administration knows how many Americans are there. So I'm going to give you an update from someone who has been working this night and day. I'm going to let you know exactly what's going on now. Because as of a few hours ago, we're still trying to get out American citizens that the government says they are already airlifting all the American citizens out, or they're going to get them all out. And I will tell you point blank, they're not even hardly trying, because I haven't had any support from the main government of the United States, but I've had amazing support from the rank and file in places in the military where we've made connections. I've had great support from guys that are retired, retired SEALs, retired Rangers, retired Special Forces, retired intelligence operatives. We've all banded together to get our brothers and sisters out when we recognized that this is a Dunkirk moment and we have a dumb D-U-M-B Kirk in the White House. Because Joe Biden has not only turned his back on American citizens and Afghans, he has something far more nefarious, because his administration is actively lying to you. And I don't say that lightly, because I'm watching this unfold. I know what is happening. Last night when our teams were moving people to the airport, I got a report about 2 a.m. that it's now turned into a, quote, military operation for us because we are under fire. Now, we're not military, meaning we're firing back. No, we are running through the fire to get people into the airport. And one of my main guys on the ground said, we'll be lucky to get 50% of the rest of the people we're trying to get there. And he said, probably 50% of us won't make it. Not only the people we're taking, but the guys that are helping them get there. We have brave Marines doing everything they can in the face of withering headwinds from a feckless leadership at the Joint Chiefs of Staff, where the generals are rolled in fat with lots of ribbons on their chest, but few accomplishments in their careers. And now the Haqqanis, along with many other jihadis, are in Kabul, and they're there for the final humiliation of America as we frantically try to pack and leave. They have scooped up weapons, millions, if not $1 billion of weapons, armor, and weapon systems, optics, that we have left behind that didn't have to be left there. They have our night vision, and I'm going to talk about that in a second. They have our infrared scopes and optics. They have our long-range rifles. They have our squad-based weapons, machine guns. They have mortars. They have cannons. They have the most sophisticated armored vehicles the world has ever seen. And they were handed to them. And it didn't have to happen that way. A lot of those weapons could have just been put in cases and put on pallets and flown right out. So why were they given to the enemy to be used right now on American troops? We have American troops fighting right now at Kaya, Kabul International Airport, trying to get people out of there. And they're being targeted by weapon systems that we left. CNN had a report, weapons seized by Taliban. They weren't seized. They were handed to them. You don't seize eggs in an Easter egg hunt. You pick them up, and that's what happened. And now, as we approach what I see as the final humiliation of America, there's a period of time between 31st August and 11 September, which could possibly be the worst, bloodiest period in the Afghanistan and possibly our nation's history. Because after the departure, the retribution and punishment of the population will begin in earnest. And I can tell you from videos that I've been sent from people I know there, sending me videos of their relatives being executed by the Taliban in outside district areas, men lined up in mass and being shot. Each man shot in the head one time, and then there's a blood frenzy where the Taliban shoot their machine guns in them. For 10 to 15 minutes, they're reloading and shooting because they're evil. They're evil, just like our president, in my opinion, is living under a curse and evil because he cares not for what is happening. And it didn't have to be this way. And an accurate calculation of the chaos currently in Afghanistan and the withdrawal is not even possible yet. Osama bin Laden now will be elevated to the status, and I want you to listen carefully to this, of Saladin's capture of Jerusalem in 1187. Bin Laden launched the attack that ultimately destroyed America. He didn't destroy it right away because he knew we would destroy ourselves. If you read the captured papers of bin Laden, he had a lot to say about Joe Biden too, and I encourage you to look that up. And in bin Laden's papers, he wrote that he believed after the first attack on the World Trade Center in February 1993 that if he could prepare an operation that was large enough to shock America to its core, that America would overreact, lash out, and do things inside their own country that would likely result in America destroying themselves. He wrote that. And after 20 years, his dream of destroying America and driving them from the Middle East is happening as we watch. 11 September will be a source of celebration for generations among the ranks of the jihadis. And the Biden administration and leadership components of key departments like the Pentagon, CIA, and state are paralyzed. They don't know what to do. A feckless team is in place trying to lead the most complex operational challenge of their lives, and they are failing miserably. In a phrase, they are not up to the task, and we as a nation have a fatal leadership problem. We are poorly led and capable of winning national wars. Our arrogance and ignorance has humbled the nation in front of the world. And the bastard stepchild of arrogance and ignorance when it comes to world politics and the military and military operations, the bastard stepchild of arrogance and ignorance is tragedy. And remember, Joe Biden is immoral, breathtakingly stupid, and at his core, a nasty, racist man. People forget he was the senator who in 1975 blocked the aid and resource bill requested by President Gerald Ford to fulfill the promises we made to the Saigon government. The collapse of Saigon is burned into our memories. And thanks to a photographer, the collapse of Kabul has been laid right next to it in our minds. And after the collapse, Senator Joe Biden, after the collapse of Saigon, Senator Joe Biden blocked another bill to fund the care and resettlement of millions of Vietnamese, Lao, and Hmong tribesmen who arrived in the United States. But a coalition of moral men and women got these people here. And when they arrived, the Vietnamese and those that helped us when we brought them here, if you look at the history once they arrived, their first and second generation children had an increased rate of enlistment in American military and intelligence services with great language skills. A few of them were interviewed and they all said they felt they owed a debt to the country that brought them to freedom. President Ford back then was assisted by many religious charities operating in America. Because when Biden blocked that money, they took custody of the refugees and distributed them around the country. You see, we didn't need a big government to resettle these people that helped us. because we had American citizens with a moral compass that knew right from wrong. Joe Biden was heard to say about the Vietnamese in one of his many moronic outbursts, F them. We don't owe them anything. You can look that up. Now the Afghan people are on the receiving end of his disdain for minorities. One of his closest mentors in the Senate was Robert Byrd. He was a prominent Klansman, a grand cyclops of the KKK, and at his core a lifetime clucker, just like Joe Biden. So where are we today? We're in Afghanistan, which is in horrific shape. But it's going to get worse, much worse in the coming days. And if something isn't done immediately to get control of our own armed forces and the deteriorating situation in Kabul, the crescendo set by the Taliban is for 11 September. And Biden set the deadline at 31st August. Remember history. Jerusalem fell in 12 days of savage fighting. Dates and precedent mean little to Americans, but history guides almost everything done in Afghanistan and the Middle East. These societies have 8,000 years of history, and Joe Biden doesn't even know what he had for breakfast yesterday. Now, the current situation as of, I don't know, a few minutes ago, is there are multiple American teams working here and with our counterparts on the ground, our Afghan friends, to get American citizens, green card holders, and those that helped us to the airport. The Taliban, after being visited by the head of the CIA and evidently talking or someone representing President Biden, have not only not honored what they said about waiting to the 31st, they are actively shooting people. A 10-year-old little boy was shot and killed going to the airport just a few hours ago by a Haqqani roadblock. The same Siraj Haqqani that America, workers, guys that are fighting for Siraj Haqqani, the same Siraj who America has a $5 million bounty on. And now Joe Biden and his people have turned their head. And more importantly, they haven't only turned their head and ignored this. They're actively lying to the American people. And I will tell you 100% they are lying. I have a lot of knowledge and understanding of the battle space and the people in Afghanistan. And coming in the next several episodes, once this winds down, I will tell you more. I'm not going to tell you about all the Americans I know that are trapped there because I don't want to put a target on their back. We're still trying to get them out. But this administration is not only not helping, they are looking at the American people and they are spouting propagandic lies while the Marines, the Army forces there are under attack, trying to get people in that. Other guys are trying to get people past the wire into the airport, and it is total chaos. The Afghans are not letting anyone come to the airport now, and they're shooting at people when they try to come. So I would ask you to please keep my friends and my guys in your prayers because they're moving people, and they know that one out of two of every guy that works for me or helps me right now probably is going to be killed by the end of the day trying to help people be free and get to the airport. And that's a stunning revelation to me. It's even more of a stunning revelation when I hear this from the White House spokes idiot, Jen Psaki.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Jen. Is there any concern that maybe trying to reach this deadline and get everybody out, mistakes are being made now that there is a report that at least one of the Afghans evacuated to Qatar has suspected ISIS ties?
Well, first, I would say we have a stringent vetting process, which includes background checks before any individual comes to the United States. So I can't speak to one individual, but I can tell you and confirm for you that we take the vetting of any individual who comes to the United States and comes out incredibly seriously. And it's an extensive process. I would say that this is now on track, Peter, to be the largest airlift in U.S. history. Bringing American citizens out. It is bringing our Afghan partners out. It is bringing allies out.
Stop. I can't listen to her anymore. She is lying through her yellow teeth. this woman is evil, in my opinion, because they know what's going on. They're completely unable to vet anybody. You know why? Because they don't have intelligence assets on the ground there. They don't have a functioning government that can tell you who's coming out of Afghanistan. And the people that understand who's coming out, the former intelligence officers and military personnel, they're not talking to, because this administration is wrapped in invincible ignorance. They're telling you this is the largest airlift ever. I don't believe that. The reason I don't believe that is if it is, it's from no help from the administration. And as of last night, when I checked at midnight, there had only been one plane brought in the past several hours, and that was a plane that was chartered from Albania. Now, I understand American planes are flying today, but there's no sense of urgency by this administration. This administration is not facilitating the movement of a single Afghan into the airport. It's strictly being done by private groups that are trying to rescue American citizens, missionaries, and Afghans that have helped us. This is the same administration that I understand yesterday turned away four female judges that we trained. Afghan women that we trained to be judges in their system, and they were turning them away yesterday. That was the report I got. Now we're moving people into the compound onto the airport as I'm talking to you. I'm looking down at my computer and I'm getting updates literally several every minute. People are asking, did we get this person? Did we get this person? Check for confirmation. That's my life. That's my life every 5 minutes. And I'm nothing special, because that's the life of a lot of Americans who don't mind sacrificing our time, our energy, and our sleep for people that risked everything for us. But we have an administration that is doing nothing but telling you that they're going to get everyone out. And I can guarantee you that's a lie. Because the list in front of me has hundreds of Americans and their passport numbers of people we're trying to get out that I don't see that we might, that we're going to be able to, but we're not going to stop trying. So keep that in your prayers, please. And I've talked to a lot of my brothers, and a lot of them are just almost distraught. But I want to encourage everyone that served. I want to encourage everyone that's seeing this and has just a pit in their stomach, because the nation we served has turned its back, not only on people that helped us, but on their own citizens. But the purpose of sacrifice that so many of us made is not transactional. In other words, a sacrifice does not become worth it if the sacrifice yields immediate, tangible returns. And I had to really dig into the Bible and understand this. Because with greater returns necessary to justify a greater sacrifice, we may not see that. A lot of us did things over there. We may never see the fruit of what happened. And maybe some Afghans won't either. But instead, a virtuous sacrifice is transcendent. It's not transactional. It's an expression of duty and faith that has an enduring power, and that power is often not fully perceived in our lifetimes. So take heart. Understand that the sacrifices our brothers made that didn't come back, it may not be seen in our lifetime, but I still believe it mattered. The sacrifice of my friend Dan Terry, who was killed back in 2010, who had been in Afghanistan for 50 years, doing nothing more than helping the Afghan people. Dan's grave is a simple cross with sticks, but Afghans revere Dan for the legacy he left behind and the thousands of lives he changed. And Dan was a humble man, and he was killed by the Taliban while he was performing medical services in Afghanistan, and up in Nuristan. He understood that the purpose of sacrifice wasn't transactional. It was transcendent. And Dan's sacrifice and so many of our soldiers meant something. There was another sacrifice that meant something in history. A person living in the first century could easily believe that Jesus Christ died in vain. His death utterly frustrated the political and military expectations of a Messiah, of the Savior that so many people longed for. Even his resurrection was but a rumor many completely didn't even know about. And by every single secular measure, the execution of Jesus by the Romans had a simple meaning. Rome had prevailed. No one could foresee in the arc of history what would happen back then. Yet we see now, 2,000 years later, and the arc of God's providence, fueled by the sacrifice of his saints, gives us enduring hope. The theologian Curtis Chang wrote, "A hopeful stance towards sacrifice is embedded in the very fabric of our faith." And taken together, our sacrifices tell a story, and what and who we choose to die for defines a faith and defines a nation. There were a lot of horrific sacrifices in the early church. Saints were tortured. But they understood that this demonstrated their commitment to an eternal truth and an eternal life, but also a commitment on this earth to an upside-down kingdom where the last are first, where we bless those who persecute us, and where we gain our lives a lot of times by losing it. Even walking on this earth, when we die to ourselves and become alive to Christ, we gain. It's the only way I stay sane during these times where I see tragedy everywhere. Now, the sacrifice in Afghanistan is different, of course, but it also tells a story. It tells a story of men and women who loved each other and died for each other. It tells a story of a people who choose to leave hearth and home and place themselves in harm's way to confront a terrible evil. It also tells a story time and again of American men and women who died to protect Afghan men and women, and of Afghan men and women who died to protect American men and women. And if you think those sacrifices didn't form bonds between people from very different cultures and very different faiths, just look at the hundreds of men and women who are working right now, day and night, who served in Afghanistan, working to get everyone they can out. Not our government, but the private citizens who honor the sacrifice of those that went before us. Keep the faith. We're not going to stop. We're going to try to get everyone out. And we have to have faith and trust God. I would encourage you to call your senators and congressmen and ask them why we're hearing nothing but crickets. I expect it from Democrats, but I'm seeing it from Republicans. Not all, but most. This is a time to bring our nation together to heal. This is a time to realize that it will take sacrifice in order to keep freedom. We all saw that plane that took off from Kabul airport early in the evacuation. Afghans flooding the airport, grabbing onto that plane, holding on, some holding on to their death at 4,000 feet, solely because they wanted to be free. If we don't start waking up in the United States of America in 2021 and recognize the atrocities being committed by our own government in the name of helping the American citizens, there won't be a plane or a runway that we can run out to and grab onto. There won't be a plane leaving for a place safer and freer than the one we are in. So we have to stand tall. We have to look back to our past in order to keep our future freedoms. We have to understand history and mistakes made in order to honor the sacrifices of those that went before us to keep the freedoms of those that are yet born here in our country. Thank you for spending some time with me today. Pray for the men and women that are working hard to bring our citizens and our allies and comrades in arms home. It's the only way in this nation that we can keep freedom rolling.
Head high, protest line. Freedom scribbled on your sign. Headline, New York Times. Standing on the edge of a revolution. Hey, hey, just obey. Your secret's safe with the NSA. In God we trust, or the CIA. Standing on the edge of a revolution.
Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose. The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bones Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge, email kfr@scalpeledge.com, or the website scalpeledge.com.